Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear argument from this relator in N. Ray First Merit Bank.
May it please the court, Mr. John Side will present argument for the relators. The relators have reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This is yet another mandamus from a denial of a motion to compel arbitration by a trial court in which there's no rebuttable fact that there's no fact to dispute that there was an arbitration agreement and that it did involve interstate commerce. There's some issues in this particular case that are unique only because of the number of parties involved. On the side of the respondents, we have a father and mother, the De Los Santos family, and then you have their daughter and son-in-law, Gary and Sarah Alvarez. De Los Santos, husband and wife, signed the contracts, including arbitration agreement for the purchase of a manufactured home. They signed a retail installment contract, an arbitration agreement, and numerous other documents. The retail installment contract was assigned to Signal Bank, which was merged with one of my clients, First Merit Bank. First Merit Bank relies upon a servicing agent called Mobile Consultants, Inc. Both of these corporations have a principal place of business in Ohio, and they are foreign to the state of Texas. There's no dispute that the arbitration agreement was signed by the De Los Santos. What they claim is that there was some type of contractual defense to arbitration, which we believe does not exist in this case.
Let me ask you a question. The arbitration agreement specifically applies to any issue involving the loan.
Yes, sir, including the validity of the loan, the performance, or any breach thereof.
And if the complaint is that the house is not as it was represented, that would not be subject to arbitration.
Well, Your Honor, it also discusses the fact that the impact of any warranty claim on the note itself would certainly be covered by the arbitration agreement.
But the arbitration agreement applies to the loan agreement, and you're arguing that since it applies to the arbitration agreement, any claim of breach of warranty on the sale of the house is subject to arbitration. That would be clear from this arbitration agreement.
Yes, sir. It says it covers the retail installment contract.
The retail installment contract. And the retail installment contract is not a loan, or it is a loan? Or
it certainly is a loan, Your Honor.
And the sale of any representations around the sale of the document necessarily involves a dispute over the installment contract.
Yes, sir. I believe that all of the claims that arise in this case arise out of or directly or indirectly related to the retail installment contract. And what that represents, of course, would be a loan from my clients to the consumers for the purchase of a manufactured.
But if their argument is that the house is not as a seller represented to us, because the result of that might be some change in the amount of money that's due under the loan, that is a dispute arising under the loan.
Absolutely.
Okay. Then my next question is, the arbitration agreement requires the buyer to arbitrate their complaint about the loan, but it excludes the seller from arbitrating about its authority to sue on the loan.
I think that's a too narrow interpretation of this arbitration agreement. I don't think that you can discriminate or segregate out the warranties that run with a manufactured home from the retail installment contract and security agreement. It would be a case of first impression in this state if that was a reason behind any decision.
I'm not sure that's my question. You are arguing that the buyer must arbitrate any complaint they have about the loan, and you argue that that's broad enough to include breach of warranty claims.
Your Honor, I think my argument is far more narrower than that because I only represent the lenders in this particular case. I'm focusing on the claims against my clients. But if this was if we're just broadly discussing whether or not I personally think that if I was representing the retailer, let's say, and the retailer was accused of fraud, misrepresentation, or other claims, yes, I believe it also would cover that. But I don't believe that's
okay. I'm sorry. Well, very quickly then. So you're not insisting that you can sue under the note in a counterclaim against the sellers, I mean against the buyers here. You agree that that's subject to arbitration as well?
Yes.
Looking at the pleadings were not contained in any appendix that we have. What claims specifically have been made against your client?
Your Honor, in the brief that was presented by the respondents, they outline numerous claims that are made against my clients, all of which arise out of the contract or a statute that involves the performance under the contract. Specifically, such things as Deceptive Trade Practices Act claims, performance issues, probably every lender liability issue that I've ever seen outside of truth in lending disclosure claims.
Well, I know, but that's why I'm asking, because I haven't heard from you in terms of what you talked about the claims being subject to the arbitration agreement, but I'm not comfortable. I know you say that the breach of warranty claim should be construed as part of a loan. But separate and apart from the breach of warranty claims, what specific claims are made against your client that arise from the actual financing transaction, the loan?
Well, if I am to interpret the original petition as it's written, I would presume that would be claims arising under the relationship between the retailer and the lender under the FTC rule, number one. Secondly, that there was a relationship between the retailer and the lender such that the lender would be liable for the misrepresentations by the retailer or the fraud of the retailer. They're more specifically enumerated, and I'm sure my honorable opposition will be able to respond to that more specifically. I have not memorized
the reason I'm giving you the opportunity to ask the question is it seems to me the starting point is whether or not any of the claims that are made fall within the scope of the arbitration agreement. Assume that, as Justice Enoch was talking with you about, we disagree with you that breach of warranty claims or anything regarding the actual quality of the home that was sold are claims arising out of the financing end of the transaction. Then my question to you is, if we put those aside, what claims have been alleged that fall within the scope of the arbitration agreement, since the arbitration agreement specifically refers to claims arising out of the loan? Somehow you've got to get within the scope, it seems to me, as a starting point, and then we can go from there. And I just want to know how you get underneath it.
Well, I believe that there are no claims that have been, I have to answer broadly, there are no claims that have been asserted by these consumers against First Merit Bank or Mobile Consultants that are, and they're certainly enumerated, that are not covered by the broad reading of this arbitration agreement.
That's a conclusion. I'm trying to understand. I want you to identify for me what claims. I understand that's the conclusion you want us to draw. I want you to tell. I really need your help in telling me how to get there.
Well, let me see if I can put a spin on that question. My understanding is Verde Homes is not before us. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Verde Homes
default.
All right. And so there's a judgment against the seller of the home.
For liability only.
Okay,
yes.
So the only claims against you are as the lender.
That's the way I understand it.
And therefore, any claim that you're asserting needs to go to arbitration necessarily, by definition, has to relate to the loan.
That's correct. I presume that would also include any FTC relationship that might exist. But as we never heard from the retailer, I'm at a loss as to what the retailer's defenses would be at this point.
Well, I'm trying to understand, again, the pleadings that were made in this case. I understand there are claims being made against you as the lender, but is there an effort being made to hold you responsible for the fact that the home isn't what it was supposed to be, or is there some claim that you accelerated a loan that you shouldn't have, or that you did something? The factual underpinning of the claims that are against you, is it all tied the fact that the home isn't what it's supposed to be, or is it tied to your client's conduct as a lender?
I believe it is both, Your Honor. To the extent that there is any conduct that we're held liable for, all those claims must be ordered to arbitration. To the extent,
well, but her question, what are those claims that you want to arbitrate?
This is the predicament we find ourselves in because we have not gone through a special exception process. We have not gone through any of the preliminary discovery that would give me an opportunity to stand here and outline specifically what it is that we think that we're being sued for. At this point, we've asked the court to order all of the claims that are enumerated against us.
But isn't the primary question that Justice Sankinson posed at the outset, have to be decided what falls within the scope of the arbitration agreement that your client had him sign.
I agree.
And if you don't ever tell us what they are, I don't see how we can answer the question that you need to be arbitrating this claim.
Well, I think we can look towards the respondent's answer in this particular matter
did
because
they
they've enumerated those.
Because of what Bertie Holmes did, we don't owe the lender any money. And we want you to cancel.
Among other, they also claim that there was a wrongful foreclosure, that there was a trespass by my client in recovering the collateral, that we have reported wrongfully credit information, that we have done them incorrectly for insurance payments. Well, I find it, I understand the question, but I do not necessarily concur with all of those particular issues. I just think that all of those must be
arbitrated.
You
don't think any of them are any good, but the issue is, are they arbitratable under your agreement? And
they must be.
Until you made those statements, we didn't even know what they were. So there are specific claims outside what they took the judgment against Verdi for that go against your client, which would, in your view, arise out of the loan documents.
That's correct.
The rights
as well
have
as
under the loan documents.
As well as the judgment against Verdi includes a rescission type of relief, which obviously would have an impact on my client.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Terry Callahan will present argument for the respondents.
The pleadings that the plaintiffs have against the lender that you've inquired about in this case are twofold. Against First Merit Bank, those causes of action were DTPA, violations of one or more of the provisions of the Article 5069, Chapter 6A, or the Texas Finance Code Section 347, because there was a transition when the old law was in effect and the new law came in place that happened during this transition.
And what conduct is alleged to form the basis of those complaints?
Basically, the retail installment contract is the only document that has anything about financing in it. And in that document, one of our primary contentions is that we have shown a defense, a revocation of acceptance, which basically destroys that.
Right, but take me back to, again, the same question
okay.
I was trying to get Mr. Sieb to answer, and that is, I'm trying to ascertain if there are any claims that come underneath the arbitration agreement. To do that, I have to understand what claims are made. Your DTPA and other statutory claims, are they based on conduct by the lender and its servicing agent related to the financing end of the transaction and the loan and the way they conducted themselves with respect to that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then why don't those claims fall within the language of the arbitration agreement?
Because basically, Your Honor, they did not show, they talk about that the entity before you now is the same entity that was who we originally sued on the Signal Bank. There's no evidence to that effect in this case. Mobile Consultants, who basically brokered and handled this entire transaction, who perpetrated many of these acts, they're not even mentioned or they're not a signatory.
Well, no, but that's not my question. My question is, if in fact you are making claims that arise out of the financing end of this transaction, why aren't those claims subject to arbitration under the agreement, just on the face of it, why don't they fall within the terms of the arbitration agreement? I understand you may have other defenses, like the contract's been rescinded and various other
okay.
kinds of things, but just up front.
Well, because talking about the loan document does not address those particular causes of action. The loan document doesn't address the fact that you come in and wrongfully take a piece of property off of real estate. The loan document does not address the situation where someone does not comply with the Texas credit code in making disclosures to consumers about loans. The loan document, the reference to loan in this particular case, doesn't talk about the fair credit reporting that they damage someone's credit.
But wouldn't that all reflect the interpretation, validity, performance, and breach of the financing transaction? Why aren't all of those things matters related to that?
Because, Your Honor, there are specific causes of action that relate to four of my defendant, my plaintiff clients.
I know, but you're not saying that an arbitration agreement has to anticipate the specific claims that are made and list them and say, unless you've said we're going to arbitrate a DTPA claim, then you don't get to arbitrate it. Don't you, aren't arbitration agreements typically tied to the subject matter of the claims as opposed to the specific causes of action that are ultimately alleged?
In many cases there are. In this case, it's not. This case is a different... I mean, I've seen a lot of retail installment contracts in consumer cases. This one is different. It talks about the loan document.
Okay, well, persuade me why the kinds of claims that you've alleged are not the type of claim... They are not disputes, claims, or other matters in question arising out of or relating to this loan, its interpretation, validity, performance, or the breach thereof. That sounds pretty broad.
Well, if structuring it like that, they would probably arguably all be, if I was on their side, I would argue that they would all be within the scope of that, as you read it there. Taking away the fact that there are no other defenses to this arbitration document itself.
Okay, so you agree then up front that they fall within there and we have to look to your defenses in order to avoid arbitration?
I do not agree with that. I think
okay,
that
well,
is...
Okay, persuade me why I shouldn't agree with them on the first point.
it's hard to explain, Judge, because as a lawyer, that document has been written. And that the way that document has been written, and any good lawyer would have to answer you positively, yes, this would probably cover and encompass those claims. I do not agree with that type of concept, that type of trickery. That's something we have to live with out here defending consumers in these cases. So I'm not stipulating that that's what it should be. I'm saying that's how they use it, and that's what's harmful to consumers in Texas.
Thank you.
Basically, under the Anglin case set out our principles for this arbitration process. The problem in Anglin is that when they said we had to go to arbitration, they didn't talk about the kind of arbitration. What's happened is we've got AAA arbitration and other type of arbitrations coming to these proceedings. They're not properly addressed or identified in these transactions for these consumers. The Anglin case clearly set out the fact, and also In re Oakwood, about the once the burden has been put on that there was an arbitration agreement that has been signed and it's in existence, then the burden shifts on the consumer or the plaintiffs in the particular case to show that there's some type of a defense to that document. We have done that in this case. I cite the court to the Gappelberg versus Landon case, which is Texas Supreme Court decision on revocation of acceptance. That case has been cited across the United States. It's been law review articles and also in the ALR. In there, if the consumer properly revokes acceptance of a manufactured home within the proper time period, is done soon and fortuitous right at the very beginning, that creates basically a cancellation of that contract. There have been no issues raised that revocation that we did in this case and the letters that we sent were improper or not sufficient or wasn't done timely or anything like that. We've established as a matter of law that the letter went into evidence. The judge heard it. She heard the evidence about the problems with the manufactured home. This was a piece of land that my clients were told that they were going to buy. They agreed to do it. No contracts were done. They dropped a mobile home on it that wasn't finished. My clients put money in this land, developing roads, septic system, a water system, electric. They didn't have title to it. And then their world falls to death. They don't get any of it. So when my clients revoked acceptance of this home, put everyone on notice, the lender didn't have the right to come in and repossess this house because under the UCC, my clients have a security interest in the manufactured home for the amount of money that they have into it at that point in time. I think that defense is a defense to their arbitration agreement in this case. And under Gappelberg, in the UCC, any type of a contract that's been properly revocation of acceptance has been done with, that contract is canceled. Even the remedies under the UCC also indicate that in revocation of acceptance. The second one is that the cost of arbitration, that is the biggest problem that we're facing with.
What's in the record on that?
Cost of arbitration? In the transcript, there's a number of provisions in there that talk about my clients were asked the question, they have reviewed the AAA rules. We presented that to them. I presented a motion to the court to take judicial notice of the AAA rules and their fees and expenses.
What are those fees?
What are those fees and expenses? I would have to look at my brief to tell you exactly.
Just order of magnitude.
As a general rule, what they normally go is about $1,000 to $1,500 a day per arbitrator that's a lawyer.
What's your fee?
Ma'am?
What's your fee?
My fee? To do arbitration?
Your fee to represent your client.
$250 an hour, so on a contingency fee basis. If I don't get a recovery from my clients, I get nothing. I take my cases on that basis, and then when we go to arbitration, we try to prove up our fees on an hourly basis. And that's based upon the years of experience I've had on both sides of this fence.
So it's $1,000 to $1,500 a day per arbitrator?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
One or how many arbitrators?
Normally in AAA, on a three-member panel, it's three arbitrators. Plus they get the travel expense, their meals, their lodging. There's a fee for everything that you file, and there's fees that the American Arbitration Association files.
And how long would an arbitration such as this last?
Normally, on the ones I've been involved in, Your Honor, which are a little over 100, has been somewhere between 2 to 3 days, sometimes four on real lengthy ones.
But the rules don't say who pays that, do they?
No, I don't know of any rule that talks about that.
But how do we know that you're
going to... Okay, I'm sorry. The AAA, yes. On the AAA, if I represent the plaintiffs, I could go ahead and contact the AAA, give them notice of my claim, set out what I think the proper claims for damages were. AAA will then send me a letter saying this is what the initial filing fee has to be. That's not the filing fee that goes to any of the arbitrators. That's AAA's filing fee. And then they submit to us a letter of usually anywhere between 5 to 12 AAA arbitrators. And it has their fee schedules, and it used to have cases they were involved in and lawyers who were on those cases, but that now has been removed, so we can't check with other lawyers who these are or the decisions. Then you make a strike, one or two or three.
Well, strikes. I'm not as concerned with the procedure as how is it determined who pays for the arbitration. Is that determined after the arbitration? The arbitrator's going to award?
No. If I want to pursue my lawsuit and I want to go to AAA arbitration or go to arbitration like they have it in their contracts, I have to pay that, or my client does. I do not pay it. My contracts of employment do not have that.
Okay, so that gets paid up front.
Yes, ma'am.
And then after it's arbitrated, can the panel then reallocate that?
Yes, they can. The problem is what you go along is that consumers, in this case here, my clients paid a relatively small down payment on this house. They couldn't afford to even pay what's the minimum filing fee.
But how is this different than if they went to trial?
Well, tremendous.
What would happen is if you didn't have arbitration, you would have a case and you'd be subjected to taking depositions and other discovery, and you would spend just as much in pretrial discovery as you would in the cost of arbitration.
No, sir, I have to disagree with that. And I've had a number of years' experience on both sides of that fence. What you see is in the area of the law that I deal with, in consumers and manufactured housing, that's not what happens. In a manufactured housing case, it's a rarity that I would expend out of my pocket over $1,500 in all discovery costs. That may be hard to believe, but that's the truth. And sometimes it's even less than that. Now, that's a great defense argument, that we have to spend all this money for pretrial discovery. That's not true. Most of the time I can write lawyers and get the discovery exchange. We're talking about a package of documents normally. And that doesn't happen in this area of the law. And that's why this area of the law involving consumers on manufactured housing, it is hurting people. It's hurting the consumers of this state.
Your clients voluntarily agreed to this, so...
They don't, Judge. They don't. I mean, I can sit up here and tell you candidly, that's stuck in front of their face, and they are told all kinds of things about it. I have listened to tape recordings just recently in San Marcos before Judge Roberts over there. And the tape recording says, this is an arbitration agreement. All it means is that you sit down and have a mediator, and then you can file suit.
Have you sued for fraud to rescind the arbitration agreement?
Yes, I have. And I have been successful on it in the trial.
Oh, in this case?
I'm not sure if we have pled fraud in this case. I don't.
Fraud yes. directed at the arbitration agreement itself. Were they defrauded in the believing
you yes, I do them. Have I do have allegations in this case that they were not properly disclosed to them in this situation
and
how they were induced into it.
How does it? Why do you have to go through the American Arbitration? I mean, this just says it shall be governed by the Federal Arbitration Act. But why couldn't there just be you appoint somebody and the manufacturer appoints some and they get a third arbitrator and you go over there and talk about it with no discovery?
That's the way
how
I
does it. How does it slip in from that to what you're telling us is $10,000 or $15,000 affair?
Because what's happened, Judge, and this is where we could really have some guidance out there, is that if the courts here would describe the type of arbitration that would be in these kind of cases, the best thing is three lawyers. Pick two, let the two pick one, or let it go to a presiding judge and let a presiding judge pick three lawyers.
How did you get assigned to AAA here?
That was what they wanted to do. The prior Who's attorney, there? They wanted to go to AAA arbitration.
The prior plaintiff's attorney.
The defense attorney.
Well, why is that? Where under this contract does it give the seller or assignee the right to decide how the arbitration is going to be structured?
It doesn't, and that's the problem. What's the guidance that a trial court gets? What's the guidance that a plaintiff gets? A plaintiff gets blindsided. These plaintiffs come in there, they sign that document. They don't know what's going to happen, Judge. They do not know what's going to happen.
Why don't you write a letter on behalf of your clients and say under the Federal Arbitration Act, we're proceeding to arbitrate my client's claims, and here's we pick our arbitrator, and you've got X number of days. And
I do that in most majority of my cases now, and I've spoken on for the State Bar. That's what I do. That's the best way to do these cases. This case could have been over with. And
Jerry, where is it?
But all of this, all that argument has existed ever since arbitration. The criticism of the arbitration movement all along was that it added cost to the litigation. The difference between arbitration and going to court is the judge is free. For you to litigate this in the courthouse, it's the judge's time is free. You could either have discovery or not have discovery. You could either pay for additional motions or not pay for motions. But the moment you send it to arbitration, you now out of pocket have to pay for that judge for however many days that judge is going to serve. And that's been a problem around for arbitration ever since the courts have said we want arbitration. How does it now become different in this circumstance?
Because the people of this state, the people that buy these homes and buy these goods, don't know that. We do as lawyers, but everybody that walks in these places gets tattooed, Judge. I mean, you can't realize the scale of this. Over a third of the houses in this state are being bought by these type of consumers. And the industry's filed in a brief in this case, and they want to poof it off that this is just a rabbit trail about the expenses. It's not. It is not.
But you say now in all your cases, at the time you demand arbitration, you're sending in the name of your arbitrator.
No, sir. If I have a case that I want to go to arbitration and my client has the money, which has not been the case ever yet, I usually contact the lawyers. I have a conference with each one of them, say, listen, let's all agree upon an attorney, select three of them. Let's guide us by the AAA arbitration rules. I have an order that we've prepared in the past where these three lawyers agree to this. They agree to follow those rules with maybe some modifications.
Where in the record can we see that you did that in this case?
I did not do that in this case. The reason I didn't do this in the case, because the other attorney who represented the lender was totally animosity against my clients. Totally. Didn't want. He says the lenders are not subject to any of this kind of stuff, period.
Did you acquiesce and agree to AAA?
Sir?
Did you acquiesce and agree to AAA?
No, I agree. I acquiesce that we pick lawyers to hear the cases, arbitrators, not AAA. AAA is too expensive. AAA doesn't do us any good.
Did the court order AAA?
Sir?
Did the court order AAA?
No, they did not. In this case, the court denied the arbitration agreement based upon the defensive theories that I presented and the evidence that was presented to her. She sat there. She heard
this man. I guess what we're getting at, how do we know? Where is it required that it's AAA?
It doesn't say in their document that AAA is required. AAA is the guiding document that talks about fees and costs of arbitration. In their document, they talk about going to arbitration, and what's left out is how do you define what type of arbitration is this? Who do you use for the arbitrators? What are the costs for this? To even think that a consumer knows those factors is just—it's just lost. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. I mean, we have got to have some help here. We really do. I mean, this needs to be spelled out. And I think Anglin, by saying arbitration, not defining arbitration, would put in your hands.
Let me ask you this: so you would not complain then if we sent this to arbitration but said that it can't go through AAA. It has to go through the arbitration mechanism or scheme that you just enunciated.
I would have complained in this case, Judge, because what happened to my clients, their family. Yes, because here we have at least three or four solid defenses that we presented in that short hearing that day, and I think they established the basis for defenses against that arbitration contract. As a general rule, when I get these cases, I find most lawyers are very cooperative. Mr. Seib and I have had a number of these. Mr. Seib's firm has been involved in an N. Ray Oakwood case, I believe. And you can do that. And I spoke on that at arbitration seminars. I mean, that's the way to solve these problems and get these cases over with. We can't. When you get somebody that's going to be a ramrod and try to force us down a consumer's neck, there's nothing I can do except put on a fight and come in there and try to come up with some facts, which is hard to do, to show that there's a defense to that arbitration agreement, like it's been defined down now. But we had the high cost of arbitration, the Randolph Green Tree case before the Supreme Court. That was our answer. The problem is that evidence didn't get before the trial court, so the Supreme Court of the United States didn't rule on it. That's still an open, viable issue.
the defense. Do you have any circuit opinions that are helpful?
There's some out of state, Your Honor. Unconscionability, I think, is we have some case law in Texas that I cited to, that Judge Gonzalez wrote something on some cases, and I can't remember the site off the top of my head, but he set out some elements that I think are very good elements that could be a guiding force for determining the elements for.
But I mean, this is a nationwide movement. Surely there's some courts that have wrestled with this. I know the Alabama Supreme Court did. They went one way and then another way.
Well, I have a lot of cases that are out of state, but I didn't burden the court with all this.
Isn't there a Ninth Circuit case before the U.S. Supreme Court right now that addressed this issue? Is that Randolph, or maybe I'm... Maybe
the Randolph versus Greenfield, that was going to be the answer, yes, sir. And what happened, it was argued the week before the presidential thing, and... So the
Supreme Court's already come back on that.
Yeah, but they carved it out. They said that because the lawyers in the trial court did not bring evidence to prove up what those costs were. What they did is they gathered all kinds of evidence from across the country of what all types of lawyers had experienced as far as these type of hearings. They got it admitted, but they got it admitted after the fact, after the trial, which was too late. And they were trying to argue that theory, and the court said, because that's not before the court, there's no evidence before the court on that, we cannot rule on that at this time.
So it's still open?
Yes, and I think we have it in this case. I mean, this is not a big case, but it's a case where people don't have a lot of money. And
well,
do we have that
evidence before us?
Yes, Your Honor, because in this thing I have the only guiding force is the AAA rules, and I have that in the court to judicial knowledge of that.
Oh, the rules, but I mean, do we have in the record what arbitrators cost?
Yes, we do. I have that in my my brief. It's pointed at some of my items in there, and also it's pointed out in the... I heard you said you didn't get the pleadings in this case, which I was surprised.
No, they're in the record. I'm just saying that in the appendix, there's not a copy of the pleadings.
Yeah, in my pleadings, my response...
Well, would pleadings be... I mean, don't you need evidence? Don't you need evidentiary hearing as to what the cause
is? Yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah, I was just trying to tell you where they were in the pleadings. They're in the pleadings in my response to it. I have them all set out. In the evidence that was before the trial court, I filed a motion to take judicial notice of the rules of the American Arbitration Association as a guide, basically. The court did approve that order and took judicial notice of those. So I had a standard by which the trial court was looking at and what some of the costs are for arbitration. That was not opposed by the other
side. Are those in the rules, the costs?
Yes, ma'am, they are. They sure are. And
the arbitrator's fees are in there?
Right, they are. But what they leave out of those rules, and this is where lawyers get hurt to represent consumers, is they don't tell me how much, say, each one of you would charge if you were out there as independent
lawyers.
Well,
we're dealing with the federal statute, Section 5 of the Act, and it doesn't require you to go to AAA. It says it goes through some procedures. Now, you're saying that we, just because AAA is expensive, we should advocate and say the federal act doesn't apply here, go on to the district court.
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is what we've shown here is what we had available to us to show to the trial court is what kind of expenses are being charged out here in this state.
So isn't the issue not whether to order arbitration, but what kind of arbitration?
That would be helpful if it got to be where it was something that was not prohibitive to the consumer. How can you ask people that pay a couple $1,000 to pay those kind of arbitration fees? It's not right. I mean, I don't think our law in the state's meant to be like that. And it's got to be changed. I mean, you cannot force that upon these people. And they just don't have the wherewithal. And lawyers...
With all due respect, we have a Texas Act. And it seems to me what you're asking is a policy decision on how arbitration should work in Texas. And it seems to me that that's the legislative function and not this court's function.
I agree, Judge. That's there.
I, to some degree, regret that, but I think that that's what you're asking for us to do is not our prerogative.
But, you know, what I thought about this, if I may speak, what I thought about was this. I believe the Anglin case does give you that opening because in there, the use of the word of arbitration, y'all have been trial lawyers, you can define what type of arbitration Anglin's talking about. It was not hard to do. I think we could do it, or you could do it. And that would give all of us a tremendous amount of guidance, and these cases would move faster. I can get these cases settled faster than those kind of things. I mean, it just takes three good lawyers. And even maybe a guy you don't like doesn't make any difference. The lawyers are normally fair. And it works like that. But you can't, you've got to have the guidance to do it. I mean, it's just, it's a big void there that needs to be filled, and I think that could do it. I think defining the kind of arbitration that this court would guide us as lawyers to follow would be very helpful for all of us.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. John Seib will present the rebuttal for the relators.
Mr. Seib, I've got a question. As I understand where we are, your position is that the only issues left really out here to be litigated are simply against the lender. And because all issues coming under the terms of the loan are subject to arbitration, in this case ought to go to arbitration. I understand that to be your argument.
Yes, sir.
The arbitration agreement says the parties agree that the assignee, I think that's referring to you all, their claims, which are below enumerated, are excluded from arbitrability under the arbitration addendum. And what's excluded from arbitration is the assignee's authority to enforce the monetary obligation pertaining to the manufactured home. I assume that's the loan. And the assignee's ability to foreclose for the failure to pay the loan. I understand that's excluded from the arbitration. And any proceedings to enforce the security agreement. If the only issues that the plaintiff brings are with respect to the loan obligations, but the lender is specifically excluded from having to arbitrate their authority to sue on the loan, do we have a question? You can, in your argument, I was asking you this question, you say, oh no, we're subject to arbitration, but the document itself says you're not. So,
Your Honor, I believe the defenses that are available to the consumers under that scenario would certainly be subject to arbitration. State court proceedings would be stayed, and we'd go to arbitration, arbitrate over their defenses.
Is there something wrong?
Okay.
When you read this agreement, the part that Judge Enoch read, that the consumer has to go to arbitration, the seller does not, and if the seller goes to court against the consumer to enforce obligations under the finance agreement, any counterclaims brought have to go to arbitration. So the even if you sue the consumer in court and they come back and say, no, we shouldn't have to pay because of all these other things, then you get to stay in court, but they have to go to arbitration on a counterclaim.
It's been used many times against us, Your Honor. We actually get stayed in court, and we're forced to go arbitrate their defenses.
I understand, but we've got this agreement where you get to go to court and they don't. I mean, that's kind of what this agreement does, doesn't it?
Well,
I know you get stayed in the meantime, but they don't get to go to court to litigate anything that they have a claim over, and you do under this agreement. Am I reading it right?
You are reading it right.
Okay.
Just a couple points.
Is there a problem with that?
Not as it works out practically, because most of the relief that's requested from the lender's point of view is relief that's best available from a state district court.
Why?
Because you're seeking sequestration or foreclosure.
What if you're trying to collect a balance on a note? Why is that?
Well, I would suggest that you're arguing a contract of adhesion, which sounds...
I'm just trying to understand how it works.
Well, I think you've hit on exactly how it works. The lender, in exchange for making this loan, has reserved itself some rights which it wants to have in order to recover its debt and the manufactured home if necessary. At the same time, it's willing to concede that the defenses that are available certainly provide them with an opportunity to stay those proceedings and go to arbitration. As far as this case is concerned, this is not a AAA arbitration agreement. I don't know where we're all getting this from. There's nothing in this agreement that talks about AAA. It's controlled by Section 5 of the Federal Act. If we can't agree on arbitrators, the court will appoint three arbitrators. I'm not here to defend AAA, but they also have pauper's affidavits, which are thrown into my face all the time representing the industry. As far as fraudulent inducement or duress is concerned, the only document these people testified to that they remembered when they signed for 1.5 to 2 hours was the arbitration agreement. And they were specifically told that if you don't sign the arbitration agreement, you're not going to get the loan. That was the same argument that was made in NRA Oakland Mobile Homes 2 years ago. This court entered a decision saying that is not fraud, fraudulent inducement, nor duress.
How much does it cost to arbitrate a case like this?
depends upon the arbitrators. In this particular case, a judge could appoint three arbitrators that don't charge $1,000 a day.
Oh, no, but excuse me. I'm just trying to understand the practical side of it. How much
in the almost 100 arbitrations I've been involved in, I would say on the average it costs $800 to $1,200 per day per arbitrator. And most arbitrations take no longer than 2 days. In every case in which it's taken longer, I would suggest that more often than not, the side with the deep pockets ends up paying for it. I've not had an arbitration yet where we've actually gone through an arbitration and we've zeroed out the other side. Mr. Callahan has done very well as a result of our arbitrations. He should be quite pleased with his performance record.
It has to be paid up front. The arbitrator's fees have to be paid up front.
That is a decision made by the arbitrators. On many occasions, the arbitrators will not require all payments up front. They will take 50%. Some will take none. Some will take all of it. Some will say, okay, one side's going to pay half. If you file pauper's affidavit, sometimes you don't have to pay at all. We're using AAA as a standard here, but I would suggest that there are more arbitration agreements out there that don't refer to AAA than that do refer to AAA. For instance, Conseco is one of the largest lenders, independent lenders for the manufactured housing industry in this state. I represent them all the time. Every one of their agreements is silent as to how the arbitrators are to be selected in terms of the AAA. They leave it out, just like this agreement leaves it out, because you have the Federal Arbitration Act. Let the judge appoint them. Or as Mr. Callahan pointed out, he'll pick one, I'll pick one, he'll pick a third. Or maybe we'll waive this and just go to one.
So it's your position then that you disagree with Mr. Callahan that cost in any way is a barrier or a problem for a consumer to be able to take the case to litigation? I'm giving you a chance to respond to his point is that the arbitration is not a real alternative because of cost. I mean, do you agree with that, or is that you have a different perspective, and in fact that is not a problem for consumers?
From over 7,000 cases of experience on the industry side, I would suggest this, that the nuisance value of a jury trial is every bit the chip that's being played against us when it comes to arbitration. From the arbitration point of view, does arbitration cost more? It can cost more. But it does force consumers to closely evaluate their claims. For instance, even under the AAA, based upon the size of your claim is the size of your filing fee. If you think you have a $200,000 lawsuit arising out of a $5,000 down payment under a case such as this, then you should have to pay more. As far as the arbitrators are concerned, that's based upon every arbitrator's agreement.
I understand that that's your perspective from the industry. Do you believe that there is a problem with respect to consumers being able to afford arbitration? That's all I'm trying to get to, Mom. Or do you disagree with Mr. Callahan?
I think it is a problem for the lawyers representing consumers, whether they want to invest in that type of a process if they come up against a case where you're in front of AAA and the only three arbitrators everyone agrees on cost $2,500 per day per arbitrator. Yes, that would certainly have a bearing on whether or not they will proceed. I've never seen a case yet, though, when they have a good case, they won't proceed. They're willing to invest in that just like they're willing to invest in medical malpractice claims and all the other lawsuits that are out there because they make a living at it. And Mr. Callahan makes a very good living at it because he's very good at what he does. And he picks and chooses his cases just like we pick and choose our defenses. And I'm not going to be foolish enough to say that whether it costs them $3,000 versus $1,500 doesn't have an impact. I don't know. I don't know how they marshal their war chest when they go into cases.
I just really want to know whether or not consumers are unable to have their claims heard because they can't afford to go to arbitration.
I've not had a case yet where that has occurred.
Thank you.
In closing, I would just like to say that the costs and expenses are not relevant because this is not a AAA case. The revocation of acceptance argument, I think, should fall on deaf ears because that is really a remedy. It is not a hurdle in which I must overcome to prove that there's no revocation of acceptance available in order to have an arbitration agreement. Prima Paint Corporation versus Kevin Conklin talk about the discrimination between those defensive contractual claims, contractual defenses to arbitration, and those to the underlying case in chief. And in this particular case, I think the trial court was caught up in all of the allegations about the retailer and forgot to discriminate the arbitration agreement. That was the only document. Again, these people actually talked about a closing and knew specifically that when they signed it, they would not get a day in court. They'd go to arbitration. In effect, their words were, we didn't want to sign that. When they told us we couldn't get the manufactured home and buy it, we did so because we wanted it for our children. They wanted to put themselves in this credit relationship with my clients so that they could buy a manufactured home for their children. They did so knowingly. They knew it at the time that they would have to go to arbitration. And I don't think that there's any unconscionability or duress or any fraud involved in that particular agreement. And I would ask this court to allow us to have the right we contracted for, and that is to go to arbitration in accordance with this agreement.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.